it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Friday, exclusively on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. Call the 8s. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922.
I'm an entertainer. I like to be on stage. There's stuff that happens like during games that guys say stuff. It takes you overboard. I like high intensity, high energy, angry games. Like, I enjoy that. I have so many different alter persons. You know, I'm Dion, I'm the snowman, and then I become like the abominable snowman when it comes to the Jets. I don't know. It's almost like getting cold for Christmas. It's bitter taste.
Back to pass, has time, looking, throws deep over the middle, picked off by Christian Benford. Back to pass, blitz coming, and he's dropped for a safety, A.J. Epenesa. Rolling to his right, trying to buy time, heaves it back across the field, looking for Ty Johnson, and going up and pulling it down off the roof was Keon Coleman for the touchdown. Pocket collapsing, Ed Oliver's got him. For a sack, ride him, Cowboy. Here's the snap, blitz coming. They run a screen to Shavers, cuts it back inside, still on his feet, and through a hole. 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Tyrell Shavers.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, Bills fans, happy Football Friday. It's beautiful out there. Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. Call the 8s. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's hometown fuel. Game day ready since 1922. We'll talk with Chris Brown coming up at 8:30, previewing this Bills Jets game, which comes your way Sunday at 1 o'clock. Part of a full Sunday, and after that game, game of the week is I'm going to watch that one: Chiefs and Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if the Chiefs manage to win that game. Think of the swing in narrative on the Chiefs before we get to the Bills. I'm going to just, if they beat the Eagles,
yeah.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. You beat Philadelphia, but done. The Super Bowl champs, rematch, doesn't mean you're going to win the Super Bowl, but everything's just fine if they beat the Eagles.
Yep.
If they lose, well, you're 0-2, you're down a couple of important pieces.
You got the Ravens coming up in a couple weeks
right.
after that.
Worthy's going to try and play through a shoulder injury. You know Rice.
That's crazy, by the way.
Yes, I agree.
He's playing through that. Dislocated shoulder like 6 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And the size he is, too. We'll see if he actually suits up.
Yeah. The Chiefs, if they lose to the Eagles, they next play the Giants. And then, as you said, it's the Ravens.
Right.
Like, the Giants, they'll get no credit for a win. Like, fine, you're 1-2.
Right.
Then, well, if they lose to the Eagles, we'll be right back to it the following week of, all right, well, if you beat the Ravens, maybe everything's okay. You're 2-2. And if you lose, uh-oh.
But they are in grave danger of starting the season 1-3.
I think so.
And how's that going to feel? It's going to feel awesome, right?
Yes.
And it will feel like this is justice in one way, but it is like, oh, this is what they were supposed to be last year. It's, yeah, you're not the best team in the league. You win the most games, but we watched you all season and went, that team is not elite. And they weren't. And they figured out a way to get the Super Bowl anyway. So if they lose to the Eagles and they lose to the Ravens, that's about right. You're losing to teams that are probably better than you.
It is wild to point out, I just Googled the Chiefs' schedule. The little Google page comes up and it says, Kansas City Chiefs, fourth in AFC West. They're fourth. They are underdogs at home against Philadelphia, which is not a surprise, right?
No.
Road favorites at Arrowhead.
We just saw the Eagles steamroll them.
Yeah. They did lose a number of the players that were part of the steamrolling.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs.
Well, not on offense, though, right?
Not on offense. That's right. Not on offense. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. All right. Well, for the Bills and the Jets, it's time for Who Needs to Get Results? Brought to you by Dan Chacha, Injury Attorneys. Don't worry. Chacha's gotcha. So, who needs to get results for the Bills?
I would say that the right answer to that is probably going to be the linebackers. I think the linebackers. Your second level, Breece Hall, not letting him get out into the open field because he's elusive once he gets out there. He's super fast and dynamic. And they were bad in week one against Derrick Henry. So I think Bernard and Milano are the answer to that. Because if they can stop the Jets in the run game this week and make Fields have to beat them, I think that's probably a pretty good outcome for them.
Linebackers. That makes sense.
The other part of that is they're supposed to be good. Like I could say TJ Sanders, right, if he's got to start in place of Ed Oliver, but I don't know what level of expectation we'd have of that going great and how much he plays anyway. Maybe Jordan Phillips is going to play a bunch this Sunday. Whereas you know Bernard and Milano are on the field every snap, and they're supposed to be good. So go stop Breece Hall. He's not Derrick Henry. He's good, but he's not Derrick Henry. So I would say those two.
Anybody on the offense need to get results?
Josh Allen.
They really might need him, of course, to be big in this game. If their defense does falter, you might need some version of Hero Josh. What I'd like here is, whatever, if you're laying out your perfect game plan, if the Bills are charting a path to victory, all right, what's the game script we'd like to see happen? Don't they want to win the toss, defer, make a stop, pressure on, get up by two scores, one-dimensional Jets, rush Justin Fields, couple sacks, see you later, final score 27-13. There's your game.
That seems like what their plan A would be.
Get out in front early, run it late, pound it. They pounded it last year against the Jets. They ran really effectively. As
they did?
With Ray Davis. They also had a 50-yard pass to Ray Davis in that game.
Ty Johnson started that game. I don't know about started. He was the first running back on the field. First couple of plays, he had a nice run. And then Davis came in, and he was doing too well. Like, they didn't take him off after that. So some combination of those two. That could have also been, like, by the way, Ty Johnson was a Jet. Little revenge game, give him a shot at it. So I guess they could go back to running the ball a lot. I mean, that game last year, they really didn't do a ton offensively, right? In that game, other than, like, the couple of drives they had where they ran the ball really, really well. Like, they only scored 23. Allen had a great touchdown pass where he, like, squeaked in between Dawkins and one of the Jets at the same time. But, like, Allen's stat line in that game, 215.
Yeah.
That's fine, right? Just a good, maybe even efficient game, if you want.
Maybe it's the penalties that made it such a forgettable game.
The penalties were... It wasn't just that there were so many of them. They didn't know what, like, was happening. Like, there were these long meetings for the officials and, like, what they were supposed to do, what they were calling. So, yeah, that was a brutal, brutal one. But, like, the second half of that game, the Bills, they give up the Hail Mary. And then they go into half up 20-17. So they only score 3 points. They go missed field goal, punt, punt, field goal, end of game. Like, polar opposite of what we just saw on Sunday.
Yeah.
That Jet game last year, they did nothing in the second half. But it's a different defense for the Jets.
I'm going to go to NFLpenalties.com. I want to find out how many penalties were called in that game. Can't you do individual games, not just accepted, but...
Yeah, maybe, because I have it in the box score, but it's listed at
22 penalties were awarded.
Between the two.
Yeah.
Over 200 total yards of penalties between the two.
I've got it here. Okay, well, whatever. Do we want to really get bogged down in this? Maybe, maybe not. 11 total called on each team.
There was a roughing the passer on Rodgers that Rodgers even said after the game. Like, that wasn't roughing the passer.
Yeah.
So, that was a tough one for those refs.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Bills and Jets, they can, of course, Sal pointed out, like, if they lose, they're in third in the division because the Jets would pass them, and whoever wins the Patriots-Dolphins game would pass them as well. That's one thing about this division. Here's a question for you. Since Tom Brady showed up, I was trying to find a way to look at this, and I couldn't just Google it and find the answer, but... The AFC East has not often had two good teams in it, period. Right?
Yeah, no.
Hasn't it felt like the North has had at least two good teams for 20 years.
There's always a race.
It seems like that.
There's always a big, important, like, week 15 game in the AFC North.
Ravens, Steelers, or the Bengals. A little while in there. And for the Bills and the AFC East, that was Brady forever with the occasion. There's one challenge from Miami, a couple challenges from the Jets, never a challenge from the Bills. Now that the Bills are in charge of this division, five in a row, how many times have there been a good team in this division? You'd have to say Miami because they made the playoffs.
Twice they've been really pushed.
New England pushed them once. But how many times was it a really good team? Like, when's the last time the AFC East had two teams you would say are contending?
There was a thought that maybe Miami could have been that, right? Like, that first year where they're scoring a million points and they have a three-game lead on the Bills, right, in the division. That, I wasn't believing it, but, I mean, they were number one in power rankings at times throughout that year. So maybe there was a thought that Miami could be it. But then, second half of that year, they lost all the good teams they played.
Yeah.
So I think that went away quickly. And then since that moment, they haven't been thought of that way. So maybe for like half a year, there was a thought that Miami could be legitimately good. But otherwise, no. Otherwise, I would say the only time there's ever been, you got two legitimate contenders in the AFC East. Wasn't it probably the 2 years that the Jets went to the AFC Championship? And one of which they beat the Patriots in the playoffs.
Yeah,
those two seasons. That's probably it. Because I don't remember. Did anybody actually take like the Chad Pennington Dolphins seriously when they won the division?
No.
Right. So,
I certainly didn't.
And you never would have taken one of those Bills teams seriously. So it's been, I guess, a weird division in that way. It just went right from one to the other. There's never really this is expected to be one of those years. I know, like Sal mentioned, like they could lose on Sunday and wake up third on Monday in the division, but they're minus 700 to win the division. Just, it's the division with the least drama in the league. And I don't know why that's the case. Is that the organizations, Miami and the Jets, doing a lot of that? I don't know.
Yesterday we posted the poll, who's going to finish second, and the Jets won the poll. Off of one game. 1 week.
That they lost.
Yeah.
At home.
You know, Sal said something about how Dan Shaughnessy in the Boston Globe wrote about the Patriots that it's a referendum on Drake May this week in week two.
Yeah.
And how many times we did that. We focused too much on quarterbacks through the drought. Like, well, that's make or break here. If you want to convince me, you got to show me something. And he said, you know, we did that with all these Bills quarterbacks during the drought. And also said we did it with Josh. And I don't think we did it with Josh. I really don't.
Not really.
The most controversial Josh was as Bills quarterback was before he ever played a game. And then it was a very procedural march to excellence.
That's right.
It never got to, I don't know if this is going to be enough. It's, will he take the next step? And every step along the way, he did. There wasn't a bad month. There wasn't a bad 6 weeks. We're like, oh, let's see if he can get back into form. He got hurt in his rookie season. He came back, and we all just kind of watched it ascend like a stock price that goes from a dollar to $50 pretty consistently, pretty right up there.
I remember thinking, and I think I was probably one of the alone on this, after that 2019 season, it was a thought on my mind a little bit because he had been fine.
Good.
That second year.
He'd been good.
He was a game manager.
He'd been the best.
I remember looking that, like, in every statistical category, he was Tyrod Taylor in that second year. Like, it was exactly like what they had with the previous guy. So I thought at that time, their defense was amazing, and they had just started to surround him with more weapons and better linemen, that I thought, like, all right, this roster is starting to look like a team that should challenge for a Super Bowl. And what I had was a quarterback who was fine and then blew up in the playoff game. And I remember thinking and saying, like, if he this year, like, you get the whole next year, like, let's see if he takes a step. And I remember saying out loud, if he doesn't, I'm going to want to go get Matthew Stafford.
Right.
But that was the only guy. And it was just because I felt this team has the chops to win the Super Bowl. I'm not sure yet this quarterback has it in him. And then before you could blink, the next season it was, okay, yes, he does.
Right. That's what
and
I mean.
He absolutely does.
If you were doing that going into 2020.
Into 2020.
Sure. He followed up with a 37 touchdown, 10 interception season.
Right. And then there was never a thought again for the rest of my life.
There was never, hey, it's week two. Boy, if he doesn't do well,
right,
we might have issues. Let me pull up his 2020 game log. And also, like, the Tyrod point's not wrong. Tyrod's first season with the Bills, he had 20 touchdowns and 6 picks. And that 2019 season for Allen, he had 20 touchdowns and 9 picks. Right. He had not yet set our souls ablaze, if I may use that.
Yeah, not yet.
But
he had the Dallas game. The Dallas game was incredible, but that was like everything else was just like, all right, he's doing fine.
Right.
He's doing pretty well.
But here's how the 2020 season went, as you're saying, like, all right, let's see if this guy can take the next step. Week 1, 3-12 and 2 touchdowns. Week 2, 4-15 and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's like.
Week 3, 3-11 and 4 touchdowns. All right, see you later.
Yeah.
It's over. Week 5.
Yeah, right. Then it's like that parting Stafford thought, like, I'll just light that on fire forever. We're good on that.
We used to have the longest drought, not only in the playoffs, but of a passer not eclipsing 300 yards in a game.
All right.
And he did it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times that 2020 season, including a pair of games over 400.
And wasn't that streak still going into that year? I don't think he had done it in his first two seasons. Maybe I'm wrong, but I remember that streak going, I thought, a couple years into his career.
He did not do it in 2019. Yeah, so.
Okay.
And in 2018, his rookie season, was there a 300-yard game in there? Probably not. No, he got to 245. Yeah.
So the 20 year.
Week 1 of 2020, that's the Diggs season.
Diggs. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Diggs shows up, the offense hits another gear, and he's throwing for 300 routinely.
That was against the Jets, wasn't it?
That's right. Week 1 was against the Jets, and then week 1 they smoked the Dolphins. But that's, we never, I don't think we ever got to.
Not really.
This week, it's got to happen. And that's the story in New England from Dan Shaughnessy in the Boston Globe. Like, eh?
Should they be there already, though?
No, they should not be there.
I don't think that's fair.
They absolutely should not be there.
Like, I would have way more patience with him. Because what does that sound like? That sounds like, well, guys, if he doesn't do it this week, doesn't do it the next week, it's like, how close do you think you are to moving on from that?
Right. It's his,
like,
it's
you
his
shouldn't be anywhere near moving on from Drake May right now if you're New England. That looks like it's going pretty good. It's kind of like 19 Allen a little bit, but you're a year earlier.
It's his 14th start.
Right. Like, I would be consistent on this. Like, by the end of this year, if his season looks like it did in week 1, or maybe like what 2019 Allen looks like, which is like, all right, he did pretty well, and he ran the ball a bit, and they won, you know, 8 games, and like it went fine. Then, if I were New England, I would be fine thinking the same thing, like, all right, he's got another year. Take the next step, and I'm sorry, if my roster starts to get into shape and looks like I can really win something, and my quarterback isn't going to take a big step, then I'm going to want to explore other ideas. But New England, I think, is very far away from that on the roster point, right? Like, the help around him, I don't think, is there. So, I think it's nuts for them to already be thinking about, like, oh, can this guy do it? Right, 14 starts in the league? End of the year is when you should maybe be thinking about that, if he hasn't taken a big leap.
Gina in Delaware. Good morning, Gina.
Hey, good morning, guys. First of all, I want to apologize to everybody for my language the other day. Sorry. I was fine, but these roads are crazy. It's bike week here, too. Anyway, I want to talk about the energy of the Jets. So what I was trying to tell you when I was calling last time was, within the last 4 or 5 years, I wish I had a date. I'm not a statistical girl. One of these times I'm going to call you and blow you away with stats. But I just know that the last, like, handful of meetings with these Jets has not been a huge amount of points differential, like maybe 6 points or so. You can look it up. You probably already know that answer. But being in that Meadowlands Stadium, as many of these Mafia fans have been, is a whole different beast. This is a gritty team. This is a team it's like dog fight. Like, Deion Dawkins, I heard some audio on him talking about it, saying, like, it's an angry game against these Jets. They're creeping on us, and I've been saying this a long time. We're going to look back, and they're going to be right on our tailbones. So all I'm trying to say is, let's be cautious of this week. I know you're not cocky. I haven't heard any cockiness. I'm just saying, the Jets scare me, man. They really do. So I'm looking forward to watching the game. And by the way, craziest place I've ever watched a game, I'm always watching it by myself. One of the guys on your thing there just said watching it by himself at a table. you meet other people. I'm going to watch it at a Dover's Backers Bar Sunday. And it's always fun because the energy is always great, whether it's a small group or a large group. Bills fans are awesome. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Go Bills, and I love my Buffalo.
Thanks, Gina. I think I am cocky about it.
Yeah,
I think I am.
I'm not afraid of
it. It doesn't. You could be afraid. Nervous. I was nervous about Baltimore. They won. How I feel, or how, you know, anybody feels, you might feel like you can jinx them or anything like that. Like,
let me ask this. Do you think more confidence for this week or next week?
Next week.
Okay.
I mean, next week.
I mean, it's a certain level of respect for the Jets. Like, I'm more worried about you than I am about the Dolphins next week.
I think that's not so much a respect for the Jets as it's a disrespect for Miami, who is falling apart.
But that's what the Jets are just trying to avoid, right?
Yeah, don't
be that
team.
The Jets have been that, and they're just trying not to be doormat that you can just walk over. And I think they are that. And I think there have been a lot of years where I would treat them the exact same way that I'm about to treat Miami in a week, which is you should roll that team by 50. And I don't think the Jets are that. Like, if the Jets beat the Bills, it wouldn't be the most stunning thing to me that could happen in the league. It's not if the Saints beat them in a couple weeks.
Chris Brown, when we get back, as we continue Football Friday, we'll talk about this matchup, the potential absence of Ed Oliver as well. It's coming up. We'll be back in a snap, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com by Northtown Volkswagen, Western New York's number one VW dealership. Shop online at northtownvw.com. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact footwear and apparel for hardworking men and women.
All right, happy Football Friday. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. Call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel. Game day ready since 1922. On to week two. We're joined on the Western Hotline by Chris Brown. Chris, it's Friday. Have you had the appropriate amount of time to kind of come down off of what was Sunday night? I know we talked on Monday, but still, you know, reliving that game from week one has been a fun thing to do throughout this week.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook a whole lot, but it was nice.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
To see some people kind of coming out of the woodwork after that game, you know, just reaching out and saying, hey, and what a great game. And there were even some people that admitted that they left early and were listening to me on the way home. So so that's what it was interesting to see the people that actually admitted that.
Yeah. Well, an epic win and now a follow-up act, an encore for this team and a different challenge, road game, and a new injury pops up. Like we'll get the update maybe from Sean McDermott 11 o'clock later today with Sal on the Extra Point Show. The Ed Oliver walking boot kind of pops up out of nowhere, and it's tough on a number of levels, Chris. First off, it's a starting player, and second off, was it his best game as a Bill that he comes off of with an injury?
Yeah, it's probably up there, right? It's certainly in his top five. I mean, he had a heck of a game last year against the Lions, I remember, and there have been others too. I even remember a game against the Chargers at the end of 23 when he closed the game out with a sack on Easton Stick when they absolutely had to have it. So he's had some games, you know, and obviously the 9.5 sack season 2 years ago was a big year for him. But after the way he played Sunday night, the thought of not having him now is like, oh, geez, you're going to start the division slate without this guy. I think it would present an enormous opportunity for T.J. Sanders, the second-round pick, if Ed for some reason can't play. But that rotation gets one man lighter, and they'd probably have to call one of the three defensive tackles they have on the practice squad up for the game on Sunday.
How big of a challenge do you see that being for them, given what the Jets present? It's not Derrick Henry, but Breece Hall's had some success against the Bills in his career so far.
Yes, he has. I actually looked it up. Since 2022, backs with more than 20 carries against the Bills since 2022, he is third in average yards per carry at 6.4. The only two ball carriers better than him are Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. So he's been pretty good against them, quietly, I think, because more often than not, the Bills have won the football game. But he has been productive with a multitude of different quarterbacks, so it almost doesn't matter what quarterback is in there. He has more often than not been productive against them. So, you know, with Justin Fields, who also presents the element of the run, you know, I think it's something that they're going to have to get a handle on, and I think they should expect to be tested on some of the same run fits that were not consistent enough in the game Sunday night. That's just what good teams do. They test you on the things you got hit on the week before to see if you've buttoned those up. So I would imagine the Bills have repped those umpteen number of times. And I'm also curious to see, you know, Tanner Engstrand, the offensive coordinator who came over from the Lions. I mean, he saw how much the rollout game was a problem for this Bills defense last year with Goff and with Matthew Stafford the week before, as a matter of fact. So it wouldn't stun me if they put Justin Fields out on the move and say, hit the open guy, and if nobody's there, just run.
Yeah, McDermott this week sounded urgent to a point. And, you know, he's one, a big one to preach fundamentals in this Baltimore game would have been, the tape would have shown him that guys were just missing spots, missing assignments, missing where they needed to be. And, well, that can be maybe for a coach, Chris, more concerning. And also, you know, it's kind of like a diagnosis, right? Like, I know what went wrong, and you're talking about repping those out. It feels like the players that maybe miss those spots and linebackers and safeties and everybody, it's a mission to get on track as quickly as possible, because McDermott's message was that, sure, it's early, but we don't want to have that fester.
Right, and I think what helps in that effort, number one, is you have a veteran core on defense that's going to be committed to, you know, getting it right, whether it's Bernard, Milano, some of the veteran guys up front. And then secondarily, even though it's an emotional win, you worry about, you know, the emotional roller coaster a little bit and being, you know, completely ready and up for this game. I think it also helps, you know, that it's your first division game of the season, which tends to bring a sharper focus as well. So I expect the defense to be markedly improved this week, because they know that even as good as Josh Allen is, you can't give up 40 points.
Chris Brown with us on the Wester Hotline. Chris, the Fields matchup, he's played once against the Bills with the Bears. How much respect do you have for him as a threat, as a quarterback? It went pretty well in week one, but it's been an up-and-down career for him so far.
It has. I think it looks as though, and again, we have a very small sample size here, guys, right? But it looks as though they're willing to let him throw enough to keep defenses honest. It's in a bit of a way, guys, a page out of the Ravens playbook. I mean, I know a lot of people looked at the stat sheet last week and were shocked that Lamar only threw the ball 19 times. Now, with the success of the run game, it kind of explains it. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tanner Engstrand takes a similar approach. We don't need Justin Fields to win us the game with his arm. We just need him to complement what we hope is an effective run game and use play action to help make him effective. And I think for the most part that worked for them last week, you know, against a defense that may not be elite, but is certainly a respected defense around the league in Pittsburgh. And they put points on the board. They moved the football. So I think they're going to continue in that vein going forward.
Chris Brown joining us on the Wester Hotline ahead of Bills and Jets. And the follow-up act for this Bills offense, you know, James Cook explosive plays, Josh Palmer explosive plays, and Keon Coleman as well. Like, to me, one of the most interesting things is what they do with Coleman here. What the Bills do, what the Jets do. And, you know, Josh looks for Coleman, but Chris, to me, like, one of the bigger things about here is how effective Coleman has been at looking for Josh. You know, that bounce that goes to him in the back of the end zone that extends that game, that's a direct result of him not giving up on scramble drill plays And it feels like he can carve out a nice little niche there with the scramble trail being Josh's primary target.
Yeah, I would agree with that because he's got the biggest catch radius on the team. He's got the best vertical leap on the team. So that widens the net, so to speak, in terms of where the ball can end up. I mean, we know Josh is a ridiculously accurate quarterback. He puts it on people. But in those off-script plays, I mean, you can think about the Jets game last year in Buffalo. I mean, he throws it back across the field. He's clearly targeting Ty Johnson, and Keon Coleman comes out of the sky and just out-jumps everybody and gets to the football first. So this, you know, what we saw Sunday night was not the first time something like that happened. So, yeah, I think that is an added element that, you know, when you are off the script, that's a good guy to look for because even if he's covered, there's a good chance he's going to be out jumping whoever is near him for the football.
The one guy that might not – I wonder if it's a Sauce Gardner matchup for Coleman. Although I don't know if you've thought at all about what they'll do. Like, he will shadow other teams' top guys. The Bills, obviously, not a team last year where that would have happened a lot. And I wonder if that game – that he just had, Chris, will get that level of attention from the Jets, or if they'll just have their corners play on opposite sides. And the opposite corner, Stevens, it feels like this is one of those games where, you know, you might want like a Bills receiver in fantasy, whoever's not going up against Sauce Gardner, because it sounds like the rest of the secondary might be weaker than it's been in past years.
Yeah, I don't think it's as good a cover unit as it's been in past years, to your point. I do wonder, though, if the Jets actually put Brandon Stevens on Coleman, only because Coleman isn't a burner per se. Stevens is like 6'3". I mean, he's tall and 195. So, I mean, not that Gardner is a runt. He's long too, but he's slight in frame. And I could see Keon boxing him out for plays on the ball. Stevens is a little sturdier, and you don't need a burner to cover Coleman. So I'm really curious to see how those matchups work. They may just stay where they are on each side and say, let's see how it goes. But I think Stevens, you know, his problem is he gets burned by fast guys on double moves and things like that. Physical guys, he's usually okay. I think that's one of the main reasons the Ravens drafted him in the first place. They play a very, you know, beat you up at the line of scrimmage, grab, clutch, hold you, and Stevens is a big, sturdy corner that can do that. If I see Palmer over there on his side, I'm liking my chances because, yeah, you know, we know Palmer is a precision route runner and he's got some juice. So to me, that's kind of the matchup I'm hoping to see. I want to see Palmer on Stevens because then I think there's an opportunity for a big play.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Chris, thanks very much. Enjoy the game, and we'll be ready for a quick turnaround with the Miami Dolphins on Thursday.
Yeah, have a good weekend, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Brown's appearance on WGR brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Northtown Volkswagen, Western New York's number one VW dealership. Shop online at northtownvw.com. And by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women. Football Friday, rolling along. Week 2, game of the week is probably Eagles-Chiefs.
I think definitely Eagles-Chiefs.
Yeah, it's a Brady game. Tom Brady went on Colin Cowherd yesterday. How many years in a row will Tom Brady go on a radio or television program and say that young quarterbacks today aren't as good as he was? How many years in a row? He's done it again.
How old is he?
He's done it again. He said, the game is so dumbed down, these guys don't know how to play. How many years will he do it?
He will do it for 45
he might not be
to
wrong.
60 years.
I'm not saying, I don't know if he's right or wrong.
Wait, sorry.
I tend to believe him.
He's a vampire. He's going to live for 500 years. So 500 years.
But he just can't resist saying, players today are not as good as I was.
Yep. I also saw that he swore 4 times.
Really?
While I'm with Colin Cowherd.
I didn't see that.
Like, he didn't know. He said, I think it was 4 different swear words even that he said. So...
Everybody,
I don't know.
Tom Brady.
I don't think they have dump buttons on TV like that. Maybe they do.
Tom Brady swearing. Everybody eats. Going to use all the words once.
Yeah.
Make sure don't leave anyone out.
This guy just thinks he can do whatever he wants.
You pretty much can, right? All right. The Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy at the top of the hour. We'll remember some Jets, too.
Remember some Jets. I got a... You mentioned Ashton Jeanty earlier was getting some talk on this. Fantasy finds, fantasy fades. I've got a big name fantasy fade that is not Ashton Jeanty.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Looked like Kirby bit down on an over route there.
Did exactly what he was supposed to do.
So he has the ability to kind of ad-lib.
Did exactly what he was supposed to do with the structure of the defense.
On the pick play, how can Terrion defend that better?
By learning by previous mistakes. You guys been around here. We got the exact same play at San Francisco last year. Turn it on to Pearsall. Learn from your mistakes. You're a professional.
How much did Terrion's the groin play into those two plays that he...
If you're injured, come out the game. We're not making any excuses. No. We're not making any excuses. Just like if I have a play called I shouldn't have called, that's on me. A player has a job to do, that's on them. We all earn our paycheck. There won't be any free rides this year. We all come to the stadium with a job to do. Do your job. Point blank, period.
What is Ben's greatest strength as a play caller?
Everything. Next question.
Kelvin Shepard, Lions defensive coordinator, former Buffalo Bill. What's Ben's strength as a play caller? Everything. Next question.
That's funny.
I will make him, if we ever do the coordinator draft to be head coaches, I'll make Kelvin Shepard my number one pick just because I want that guy to talk every week and be a coach.
Question. If he became a head coach in the league, he'd be the first former Bills player to become a head coach since who?
Do you know the answer to this?
No, I don't know the answer to this. I'm wondering out loud. He played 2 years for the Bills. He started 24 games. He got traded for Jerry Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
If he became a head coach, when's the last time the
I have the answer.
A Bills player was a head coach?
Frank Reich.
Yeah, that's right.
If you want to include other like non-NFL jobs, a quick search of this indicates that Don Beebe was a head coach at Aurora University.
Okay.
And John Holasek at Loyola Academy.
Okay.
I've also got Mike Jasper, Stetson University.
Mike Jasper. And the giant lineman, yeah. Mike Jasper?
And Dick Geron. Did Dick Geron play for the Bills?
I don't think he played for the Bills.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he didn't. But I guess I'm not 100% on that. Like, nobody from the drought era is coaching, right? Other than Kelvin Shepard.
Alex Van Pelt got close.
That's a good
he's
one.
He's offensive coordinator. Close.
Aaron Glenn played for the Jets, and now he's the coach. The head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe this is not uncommon, though. I wonder how many teams have like a bunch of former players, the Cowboys maybe, that have become coaches, head coaches in the league. Frank Reich, though, that's right.
Yeah, Dick Geron played for the Lions and the Bengals.
Gotcha.
All right, the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. We also might have some of you do some tech troubleshooting for us regarding the chat, if you've got an answer for this. Jeremy and Joe, it's Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, call the 8s, and buy Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922. Jeremy White here. How about some pizza this weekend? Yeah, Sunday, 1 o'clock, perfect time to plan ahead and get some pizza for your game day. The Mafia Pizza is back, and it is stacked with pepperoni, salami, capicola, and sausage, topped with mild banana peppers. It's not a pizza without banana peppers. Melted mozzarella, all finished with a bold buffalo sauce drizzle. Don't miss out on the primetime deal from Crosby's. It's any specialty pizza and 2-liter Coke for just $15.99. That's a prime deal from Crosby's. When you shop or fuel up at Crosby's, a portion of the proceeds goes to the Patricia Allen Fund, and together we can make a difference and add a smile to your day. So head to your local Crosby's. Visit CrosbyStores.com today. You can download the Crosby's app, make your order, get that Mafia Pizza. It's a favorite. They have lots of other options, too. Breakfast pizzas. I mean, it's a 1 o'clock game. Maybe you want a little earlier flavor. Whatever you do, though, it's Crosby's Pizza. CrosbysStores.com. Online at CrosbysStores.com. Of course, download the Crosby's app for your mafia pizza.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.